Hello, listeners. Welcome to Human Rights Unscripted. Before we begin, I'm pleased to announce that the Human Rights Brief, Volume 27.1, has been published and is available now. This newest volume includes insightful articles about the prevention of torture, the repatriation of North Korean refugees, and a detailed analysis of the human rights violations inherent in female genital mutilation. It also provides a review of cases from the Inter-American Court of Human Rights and the European Court of Human Rights. As you can tell, this volume provides a very thoughtful look at some of the most important issues in international human rights law today. To read the volume free of charge, go to our Instagram page at WCL Human Rights Brief or visit our website, hrbrief.org. And now, on to our interview. Welcome to Human Rights Unscripted, a podcast from the American University Washington College of Law. Today's episode features our staffer Veronica Doolin's interview with Professor Maria Jovanovich. Maria Jovanovich is an associate professor at the Essex Law School in the United Kingdom. Her research focuses on modern slavery and its intersection with different legal regimes, such as human rights law, criminal law, labor law, immigration law, and international trade and business regulation. She is the author of the book State Responsibility for Modern Slavery in Human Rights Law, published by Oxford University Press in 2023. Dr. Jovanovich is currently leading a research project on the experiences of modern slavery survivors in the United Kingdom's prisons. She holds a Doctor of Philosophy, a Master's of Philosophy, and a Magister Juris degree from the University of Oxford, as well as a law degree from Serbia. She previously held a postdoctoral fellowship in ASEAN Law and Policy at the National University of Singapore, and a lectureship in Serbia. We hope you enjoy the interview.
Hello, Professor. If we could just start with a discussion of your background generally, what do you really focus your research and advocacy on? That would be a great start.
Thank you very much. Well, I would say that I'm not so much engaged in advocacy as much as I'm engaged in academic research. So my research generally focuses on human rights law as a broad area of inquiry, but I specialize in something that is often here in the UK called modern slavery and is more widely known as human trafficking. And we can talk about that a little bit later because there are a lot of different concepts that figure in this discussion and the perhaps sometimes confusion about their relationship and their meaning and so on. But modern slavery from the sort of human rights perspective and sort of legal perspective, because the issue is cuts across many different legal fields, but also many different disciplines. And so human rights law is just one lens that you can use to look at it. And this is something that I started working on maybe 15 years ago when I started my PhD thesis, and it kind of, I just stuck with it.
Fantastic. Do you primarily focus on European issues of modern slavery?
Not really. You know, I'm looking at a kind of general international human rights legal landscape. But I have to say the reason why I focused on European kind of framework is European Court of Human Rights, or some call it Strasbourg Court, has been the most proactive in developing jurisprudence on this issue. And so there is a lot more material, I would say. I haven't really looked much into your jurisdiction and what's happening in the US, but I looked at, I spent some time in Asia, and so I looked and compared the European legal system on human trafficking, the one developed by the ASEAN or the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. So yeah, like I would say that I focus mainly on Europe, but I do comparisons.
Understood. And what is your sort of sense of the current landscape of human trafficking and modern slavery law, just in the jurisdictions that you know about?
Yeah. Well, it's actually quite interesting. So let's say that the sudden kind of increase in the interest in this subject started with in 2000 with the adoption of the UN Palermo Protocol, which was a protocol to the Transnational Organized Crime Convention. And as such, it had a very specific focus. And so it has been, it was maybe a decade before this started to be seen more of a human rights issue, the safeguarding issue, the subject of state so-called positive obligations, because human trafficking and modern slavery, they often occur in sort of private space. So it's one individual subject or organization or group of people exploiting others. But human rights law, as you probably all know, focuses on responsibility of states. And so this, the notion of positive obligations is a way in which states are held accountable for what is essentially a private conduct. So this was a kind of progress, if you like. And in Europe, in 2005, the Council of Europe adopted the Council of Europe Anti-Trafficking Convention with a distinctly human rights focus, right? So then it was, I would say, a period of progress and development and, you know, as I said, jurisprudence, but also state activity. But I would say that in the last potentially, well, I don't know, over five years or so, there has been a shift. The issue of modern slavery is being swept under this broader anti-immigration agenda, in my view. It's been conflated, we can talk about that, with illegal migration, how they call it here in the UK. There has been a kind of move to separating deserving from not undeserving victims. So people who are seen to be illegal immigrants, even though they were trafficked into a country, or people who have been involved in criminal offenses, even though they were forced to be involved in criminal offenses, have been slowly excluded from protections. And so those available protections seem to be only kind of intended for those perfect victims, like a perfect individuals who were just simply, and that doesn't exist. They are just like any of us. They wear different hats. So there will be no perfect victim. I would say that would be the trend, one of the trends, conflation with immigration control. And secondly, there is, again, because of that, discrepancy between what people are owed to in theory and what obligations states have, they have committed to, and what's happening on the ground. And even if we just look at the Palermo instrument, it's widely ratified. Even if we judge it on its face, on the criminal justice measures, it failed because there are so few of the number of estimated or even identified, formally identified victims. So it's a downward kind of path, I would say, in protections available and in the global anti-slavery action. And I would say that's a global trend. I don't think it's limited to just Europe. And I think the UK, the recent legislation here in the UK that I know you want to talk about is just a manifestation of that.
So that's a great transition. You came to sort of my attention when I was researching the Illegal Migration Act. So if you wanted to tell us a little bit about that act, I know it passed last year, and its general effect on your work or the things that you study, rather.
Yeah, absolutely. The Illegal Migration Act is not an act specifically that deals specifically with modern slavery. So a narrative here in the UK is that there are too many people arriving here illegally, even though legal routes are not quite available at all. A lot of them are asylum seekers, refugees, and some of them are survivors of modern slavery. But that is quite a political problem. It has been over the, you know, the topic has been highly politicized. And so in response to that, this Illegal Migration Act or the bill has been proposed. But I just need to say that that is the kind of part of a broader package. So the first instrument that was adopted was a year before that. It's called Nationality and Borders Act. So that piece of legislation, and I focus mainly, they have a lot of different provisions and very many restrictions, but they have a section, these acts have a section dealing with modern slavery. So the Nationality and Borders Act and then the Illegal Migration Act that has sort of strengthened and tightened all these restrictions. And most recently, we have firstly a treaty with Rwanda, a treaty between the UK and Rwanda, and the Safety of Rwanda Bill, which is currently going through the parliament here. So this is a package of legislation. Now, modern slavery legislation has been kind of brought into that picture because it's been seen as a kind of weak link, as a way for people to avoid being deported by claiming to be victims of modern slavery. So this is the official narrative. The restrictions now imposed on modern slavery legislation are meant to sort of prevent that so-called abuse of the system. Now, the problem really is that this is just a story. So there hasn't been, or at least the government hasn't shared any evidence to suggest that modern slavery protections have been abused. Quite to the contrary, evidence suggests the opposite. And there is also a lot of misunderstanding here in this space about how a person gets to be identified as a victim and protected. It is not that people can self-report or volunteer into the system. The framework developed here to address individuals contains official organizations with specific duties, and most importantly, Home Office, the government itself. And figures show that these organizations and so-called competent authorities have overwhelmingly found that most of these referred to the system were genuine victims, over 90% in 2022. So the figures, unless presented with specific evidence, it's not really clear and that's the case. So this is a little bit of a background story. So the Illegal Migration Act, it doesn't specifically target survivors of modern slavery, but it brings them into the scope of that legislation. And the consequences are huge. I don't know if there are any specific issues you would like to know, but yeah.
Yeah, if you could talk a little bit about sort of the new restrictions that these people face or sort of the consequences of these new acts, that would be great.
There is this trend of trying to separate deserving from undeserving victims. So the Modern Slavery Act, what it does, it says that anyone who has arrived in the UK irregularly or illegally will be subject to removal. And they cannot claim any protections under the existing refugee law that is binding on the UK or human rights law or modern slavery law. Now, that's a problem because a lot of people, if they are victims of human trafficking and if they are foreign nationals, they would most likely be trafficked and brought here, maybe without their own wish. And so they are being penalized, excluded from these protections, as if they have wished to do so. So this is what this act does. So it precludes any kind of assessment of person's status. And the consequences are huge because the thing is, under international law, which is binding here in the UK, the government has a duty, has several obligations. They first have an obligation to adopt appropriate legal framework that provides for genuine, practical, and effective protection of survivors of modern slavery. Then they have an obligation to identify and protect people who are suspected to be victims. So the threshold is very low. The authorities need to have reasonable grounds to believe that a person may be a victim. And secondly, this obligation does not depend on the report or self-report of a victim. It is, we say, authorities need to act ex officio on their own as soon as they have this credible suspicion. And finally, authorities also have a duty to investigate and prosecute the perpetrators. So all these obligations have been now breached by the fact that people are not being put through the system. So that is a huge problem. And of course, a lot of people from the field, not activists, but anyone who understands law on this in this field had something to say against it, but it has fallen on deaf ears. So all these pieces of legislation keep getting through the parliament, and the most bizarre, perhaps legally, you're a law student, so you would understand how bizarre this is. So the Safety of Rwanda Bill, have you heard of that before? Do you know what it is about?
I think it
Okay.
would be helpful to sort of explain it. I've heard a little bit about it, but it would be helpful to explain it to the listeners.
Okay, and just keep in mind that this applies to a broader group of migrants. So some of them may be refugees and so on, not just victims of modern slavery. So what the Illegal Migration Act does, they say, if people come here illegally, they will be removed. Now the question is where? Where are they going to be removed? Sometimes we don't know where they come from. They don't have any documentation. Where are they going to be removed? And so the government has tried to find, to make agreements with different countries that may want to accept these people. One such agreement is made with Rwanda. And it means that people, let's say they are fleeing conflict in the Middle East now, or, you know, Syria or Afghanistan or so on. They're being persecuted. They come here using illegal means, which is the only means they have. And they are going to be removed to Rwanda. So a person from Afghanistan will be sent to Rwanda. And Rwanda will promise to protect them and whatever. And that applies equally to survivors of modern slavery. So somebody can be trafficked from, let's say, Albania in the UK, and that person may find themselves in Rwanda. So they made this deal with Rwanda to go ahead with those sort of removals. And then, of course, that led to a legal challenge, and that legal challenge went all the way up to the Supreme Court of the UK. And the UK Supreme Court found this scheme unlawful. They found many flaws in Rwanda's system, in protections available. They didn't say it would be in every case unlawful, but in the current circumstances, within the current system that exists in Rwanda and protections or the lack of, it is unlawful. The UNHCR has intervened in the case. A lot of international organizations, you know, supported the views of people who opposed this deal. But what happened was that the government then decided to legislate. So what they did is they brought literally legislation that says Rwanda is safe and no court can question that fact. So they have precluded courts from doing their ordinary job. And it is even more outrageous because the court has just said it's unsafe. So they have looked at the fact, they have looked at evidence, and they have found it unsafe. And then the government says, and because we live in a country which has supremacy of the parliament and so on, so the legislation says, so the legislation may well say, you know, this wall behind me is black and not white and so on and so forth. So that law is currently being discussed in the parliament. As I said, all these potentially negative effects are even more problematic when it comes to survivors of modern slavery who are vulnerable, individuals who have experienced severe trauma and so on and so forth. So that is, in a nutshell, what is happening at the moment.
Just to follow up on sort of the human rights law aspect, you've argued that this is specifically against the UK's European human rights obligations. Could you sort of explain those more in general to our audience and then how the UK is purportedly violating those obligations?
Oh, okay. Well, I mentioned it briefly, but I'll try to be more specific. So we don't have, as I said, beyond the UN Palermo Protocol, which is a protocol to Transnational Organized Crime Convention, we don't have a general universal anti-trafficking treaty like there exists on a European level. And that is so-called Convention on Action Against Trafficking in Human Beings, or I call it sometimes ECA. And then we have the European Convention on Human Rights. And these two instruments are both adopted within the umbrella of the Council of Europe. And so the court, the Strasbourg court, when they interpret Article 4, which prohibits slavery, servitude, and forced labor, doesn't even mention human trafficking. And as you may know, all these conventions are very brief, and the substance, the meat of these prohibitions or obligations is to be found in the European Court of Human Rights. And the interpreting Article 4 is relying extensively on this other very detailed specialized anti-trafficking instruments. So that is why I focus mainly on that, because even though we have ICCPR, which also prohibits against slavery to enforced labor, there hasn't been much guidance to instruct the states what their duties actually are. Because human rights instruments, having been drafted in the past century, they're very brief. They usually say slavery is prohibited, servitude is prohibited. They don't mention positive duties. They don't mention what happens when another individual affects human rights of another, domestic violent cases. So the European Court of Human Rights has said, well, this is Article 4 is one of the most important provisions, one of the so-called absolute rights in the convention. What does that mean? That means that countries may not restrict obligations or interfere with these rights, even in the circumstances threatening the life of nation. And this is a clause, there is a clause in the convention which says that the countries can derogate from the convention in times of wars and high public emergencies and so on. But this is one of the few articles, few rights that countries cannot derogate from. And they use this language of emergency to justify these radical measures, saying, you know, once the situation calms down, we will reverse back. And they, in fact, to allow for these restrictions to be lifted. But this is not permissible under European human rights law. So I already said the obligations are very clear. There is one general duty to adopt and enact appropriate legislation to provide for genuine protection and punish the perpetrators and to identify and support victims. And all these obligations are being either interfered with because on the face of law or have been manifestly in breach as such. Now, the problem is, you might ask, so what? You know, I can say this is in breach of international law. Many other people may say that. What does that change?
Do people who are being harmed by this act, do they have any recourse in the UK or in the European courts?
People can always petition the European Court of Human Rights. I just need to mention one important thing, is that even though the Illegal Migration Act is passed as law, many of its provisions have not commenced yet. And so, like the case with Rwanda, nobody has been deported. Not a single plane has left the UK. So all these modern slavery, also restrictions, they haven't really yet started. There is one particular provision that has started being implemented. And then there was a legal challenge. And now that's, again, put on hold and the government changed the approach. So-called public order disqualification. So I said in the beginning that the target of these laws are people arriving illegally. But then there is also people who have been who have committed criminal offenses. And that's a big thing. That's something that I've been researching a lot. And recently I was looking at the role of prisons, because what we have come to realize is that a lot of survivors of modern slavery end up in prisons, unidentified and unsupported. And what's perhaps the biggest paradox is that, in my view, there are currently more survivors of modern slavery in prisons than there are the perpetrators. So in the UK in 2022, we only had 282, I think, prosecutions. The estimate of the number of victims is around, I think, 150,000. And then the research we have done with prisons suggests that at least that every prison has at least one survivor of modern slavery. Some have many more. And there are over 100 prisons in the UK. So the math is quite easy. So that's the biggest paradox, I would say, and the biggest problem, that the state is going after the victims and they experience the sharp end of the criminal justice system and not the perpetrators. So that's probably the most striking finding. But as I said, so this public order disqualification is one example when you say, what can people be do about it? So this provision, which was introduced originally in this Nationality and Borders Act, and it was only strengthened in the Illegal Migration Act, which says that anyone who has been convicted of criminal, of into prison of any length, it can be 6 months, is to be excluded from protections available for modern slavery survivors, which means that people can be forced. It's quite a big problem here, it's so-called criminal exploitation, where people, often even children, are forced to commit criminal offenses, going from cannabis cultivation, pickpocketing, all sorts of things. So if they are convicted to prison, they are automatically excluded, which increases chances of people being exploited further, because the traffickers will now target those people to further exploit them. So this so-called public order disqualification has been challenged in court. And just earlier in January this year, the government has kind of settled this case, and they have withdrawn the guidance that they have to operationalize that provision, and they have built in certain safeguards. And I'm actually working on a piece now discussing that. They do not simply remove all the risks. But so this is the recourse that people may have. And people can always petition the European Court of Human Rights. But that is quite a slow process. Cases are, the court is overburdened. And so,
Do you expect that there will be more challenges in UK courts once the provisions come into effect?
I absolutely think so, yes. I mean, that's the only thing that people have. And now, because of all these challenges, there is a sort of campaign against lawyers who represent and who push these cases. So it's kind of like, maybe if you don't follow this on a daily basis, it might sound quite Orwellian for you. So the lawyers are being accused now for doing their job, which is to represent clients. They're being called lefty lawyers and so on, and so trying to obstruct. It's going to be, I don't know how things will develop, to be totally honest with you. But what's worrying really is that this is not, maybe these developments are the most extreme in the UK, but there is certainly a trend in that direction. And if you look at what the EU has been doing recently with their sort of new migration pact, it's getting harsher and harsher for people who are others, people who are not Europeans, to claim protection they are entitled to. And then there is perhaps one more trend I wanted to mention we haven't really had time to talk about. It's this responsibility of corporate actors. So there has been a trend in looking and seeking more responsibility of corporations for what happens in their supply chains, in their value chains, for, there were prominent cases. And I think here, there in the US, attempts to use the Alien Tort Statute to go after corporations. So yeah, I think it's one of the important trends is this kind of push towards corporate responsibility. But the progress of that is extremely slow. And, you know, the provisions here in Europe, in the UK, they're very, very weak. They usually look for only reporting obligations, not really. France has obligations of due diligence. But just a couple of days ago, the proposal for the new EU-wide directive in this on human rights due diligence, which would include, of course, slavery as a big issue in global supply chains, but it's much broader, has actually not gone through. And now it remains to be seen. So I definitely would say that the overall trend is a sort of pushback against greater protection. And at the same time, we have a massive increase in modern slavery, which is due to many things, climate change, which makes a lot of people get to move, COVID-19, and protracted wars, which are always a breeding ground for human trafficking. So on one hand, we have this increase in numbers of people subject to human trafficking and modern slavery, and on the other hand, have reducing protections.
That makes a sort of difficult pivot to one of our last questions, which is sort of about the we have a lot of people who listen who are interested in human rights law and maybe interested in the issues of modern slavery. And obviously, you've just outlined that there's been a pushback in the UK against people who are sort of, you know, representing their clients in that sphere. But do you have any sort of advice or guidance for people who are interested in going sort of into your line of study or into the line of work of protecting people against modern slavery?
I collaborate in my research with a lot of international organizations, International Organization for Migration, International Labor Organization, Anti-Slavery International, not to mention UNODC. So these are just some very big global actors who have modern slavery very top of their agenda. So there is a lot of opportunity depending on aspect. And I think we maybe haven't spent enough time unpacking the notion of modern slavery and what it means and what it includes and what it excludes. It's a complex, you know, modern slavery is just a shorthand, an umbrella term for a range of practices. So there are a lot of different angles and different lenses through which you can address this problem and look at it. So, you know, using child soldiers, forced marriages, forced criminality, which is a phenomenon on the rise, trafficking of human beings for organ donation. And so there are many different issues that people may find really motivated and passionate to do something about. And as I said, many different actors that are dealing with this. So there is definitely a lot of scope and space. And I would say the field is growing. And yeah, it depends on new people, fresh ideas and fresh perspectives. And there was a recent study examining the need for reinvigorating the anti-slavery action. So we now have legislation, we have kind of clear set of obligations and responsibilities of states. And the problem really is implementation and understanding why states are not living up to their obligations. And many people claim it's the lack of political will, it's all these overwhelming developments that have shifted focus from modern slavery to more pressing issues. So yeah, it's really important to push this problem further up the political agenda.
This has been an episode of Human Rights Unscripted, podcast from the American University Washington College of Law. Please subscribe on Spotify for more episodes as they come out. And please follow the Human Rights Brief on Instagram @WCL Human Rights Brief. Thanks so much for listening.